In this recording, I'm going to talk about emotional self-reliance. What is it, and how can we become a more emotionally self-reliant? Welcome, I'm Sheena Kasmudliar. I'm a licensed mental health counselor, and I help people who want to make sense of their emotions, heal from trauma, and connect intentionally with their loved ones. I'm also the creator of Emotions Made Simple, the online course that will help you transform your relationship with your emotions for less than the cost of one therapy session. Now, in this recording, I'm going to cover some skills that will help you become more emotionally self-reliant. But if you would like to go even deeper on this topic, please check out the course. So, let's talk about emotional self-reliance. Now, the information I'm going to share with you was originally shared with a local church congregation. So the ecclesiastical leader of this congregation approached me and asked if I would present on the topic of emotional self-reliance. And so at the beginning of the meeting, I just asked people to share what their thoughts were on what it meant to be emotionally self-reliant. And lots of people had some really great responses. And then I shared my opinion on what I think it means to be emotionally self-reliant. And I think it means that you have an ability to understand your body's signals and to choose how to act on those signals. So here's what I mean by that. So I explained, of course, again, this is a church congregation that I'm speaking to, and so I'm trying to use language that congregants would resonate with. And I explained that we are spiritual beings living in terrestrial bodies. So we are spiritual creatures, but we also have these mammalian bodies. And these mammalian bodies have certain characteristics shared with other mammals. And we also have certain characteristics shared with reptiles. And these characteristics are part of our survival makeup. They're part of what helps to keep us alive and going. And part of that makeup is this emotion response system, the ability to take in information from our surroundings and to quickly interpret it and then to have some sort of a response that urges us to act. So for example, let's say that I am going to head out for a walk and I'm out for a walk in my community and I decide that I want to cross the street. So I step out into the street and then all of a sudden I hear this car zip around the corner and come racing toward me. What am I going to feel? I'm going to feel the emotion fear, and that fear is going to prompt me to act. I'm not going to have time to think about, should I be afraid? Should I not be afraid? My body's just going to automatically respond and jump back out of the way. Similarly, if I am about to give a presentation, and actually this happened to me as I was preparing for this lesson to this congregation, as I'm getting my handout ready and I'm preparing what I want to say, and I'm getting closer and closer to the deadline when I need to be done preparing my information, my heart rate increases, my breathing becomes more shallow, my thinking becomes more disorganized because I'm having a response to this experience, and the emotional response I'm having is anxiety. And anxiety, like fear, serves a purpose. So fear drove us to jump out of the way to protect ourselves, and anxiety drives us to prepare for things so that we don't end up looking like a loser or embarrassing ourselves. So anxiety serves a purpose, and all emotions serve a purpose. Sadness is something we experience when we've had some sort of a loss. It could be the loss of a loved one due to death. It could be a loss due to a loved one making choices that we don't agree with. It could be loss because of a joyous occasion. Maybe we're moving and it's an exciting move, but there's still loss involved. Maybe we were really hoping for a promotion, but we didn't get that promotion. And so there's a loss of expectation or a loss of what we imagined our future looking like. So anytime we have an experience of loss, we also have an experience of sadness. And the purpose of sadness is to help us turn inside and reflect and think about how do we want to move forward in light of this loss. Sadness also prompts others to draw in close to us. It invites others to come in and comfort and help us. So every emotion we experience has some sort of a purpose. It also shows up in our body in the form of thoughts, physical sensation, and urges. Okay, so let's go back to our definition of what it means to be emotionally self-reliant. Emotional self-reliance is your ability to understand your body's signals and choose how to act. So if I'm getting ready for a presentation and my body is having some anxious signals, am I aware enough of my body to recognize that for what that is? So my heart is racing, my breathing is shallow, maybe I'm getting a little bit shaky. If I was a less emotionally aware person, I might not even recognize that that's going on. And that energy then builds and builds and builds until I snap at someone, or I, you know, explode in frustration, or I break down and cry, or I decide I just can't do this, and I call the ecclesiastical leader and say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to give this presentation today. Then I'm not being emotionally self-reliant because I'm allowing my emotions to run my life. And they're actually stopping me from maybe doing something that I would have wanted to do otherwise. So being emotionally self-reliant means understanding that our body is trying to send us certain messages and being able to interpret those messages and then decide how we want to act. Now, here's where emotional self-reliance gets really tricky. Now, I talked about how this energy in us can build and build and build, and then it can kind of explode out the top. And the reason it does that is because, like other mammals, we have this built-in threat response system. And anytime we experience some sort of a threat outside of us, we're going to have this response. So just like when I was stepping out into the street, I saw a car racing at me, I had a threat response and my body automatically acted. And our bodies do this in response to anything that it perceives as a threat. And our bodies perceive all kinds of different things as threats. So our spouse could look at us in a certain way, or our parent could talk to us in a certain tone, or our child could disrespect us, and we might have this threat response. And the way you can tell that you're having a threat response is when your muscles go tight, so like your jaw clenches, your shoulders go up, your stomach goes in, your chest tightens. So if your muscles go tight, if your leg starts to get shaky, does that ever happen to you where you're sitting but your leg just can't stop shaking? Your breathing gets shallow, your heart rate increases. These are all signs that you are having some sort of a threat response. And as that energy builds and builds and builds, it gets to a point where it has to release itself into some sort of action. And that will usually look like some sort of a breach of integrity. What I mean by that is that your body will do something that you otherwise wouldn't have consciously chosen to do. You're going to snap at someone. You're going to throw something. You're going to do something that you otherwise wouldn't have done. So that is being emotionally reliant. You're always reliant on how other people are acting and behaving around you to help you stay regulated if you're not able to bring your own emotions back into check. And so the way that you prevent yourself from getting to this explosive state is by noticing those body signals and interrupting them. Okay, so let's talk about some strategies to help you take back control of your own emotions and to keep your body from going into this threat from going into this explosive space. So let's talk about how you can become emotionally self-reliant. And I have six skills for you. The first one is to track your emotions. And you're going to track four things. You're going to track your emotions, the situation when the emotions occurred, your response, and then you'll have a reflection. So when you write down your emotions, you're going to answer questions like, what emotions did I feel today? Did I feel anger, sadness, guilt, fear, happiness, or any other emotions? You're also going to write down the situation. So you're going to answer the questions, what happened right before? Who was I with? What was I doing? When was it? Where was I? Then you're going to write down your response. What was going through my mind right before I started to feel this way? What did I feel in my body? What did I have the urge to do? And what did I actually do? And finally, write down a reflection. Did I act the way I wanted to? If this situation were to happen again, what would I do differently? And I also recommended to the congregation I was speaking to that they could write down, did I act in a way that the Savior would have me act? If not, then that's important information. And there could, this time of reflection can be a time to think about what could I do differently in the future. Now let's talk about some things that you can do differently in the future if you're finding that you're having difficulty keeping your emotions under control. So this brings us to principle number two, which is to check in with your body throughout the day and notice how it feels. So remember, if your muscles are tense, your leg is shaking, your heart is racing, your breathing is shallow, it's because your body is having an autonomic threat response. And this is the time to give yourself some self-talk, remind yourself, actually, in this situation, I really am safe. And then help your body relax using one of the following skills. So this takes us to number three, which is to take a deep breath. Sheena, what is it about taking a deep breath? Well, I'm glad you asked. Taking a deep breath helps to calm your autonomic nervous system. That's why it's spoken about a lot. And a great way to help your body take a really good full breath is by leaning back in your chair, putting your hands behind your head and pulling your elbows back, and then taking a nice deep breath. And when you do this, you should only feel your belly expanding. If this is kind of tricky for you, you're like, Sheena, I'm trying it. It's not quite working for me. Another way you could try it is by laying down on the floor or your bed. Put one hand on your belly, one hand on your chest, and breathe in a way that only the hand on your belly rises and falls. If your chest is rising and falling, you're not getting a complete breath. But if your belly is rising and falling, you are getting a full breath. And that is the type of breath we need to help reset the autonomic nervous system. So practice taking these deep breaths. Number four, relax your muscles. Pretend like you're a wet noodle. Okay, so unless you're driving or doing something where you can't do this, practice this right now. I want you to just imagine that your body is a wet noodle and it's going to go completely limp. And then as your body goes limp, scan your body for about 5 to 10 seconds, starting from the top of your head and moving down to your toes. And as you scan your body, notice any other muscles that still need to be relaxed and gently relax them. Now, for some people, this is really difficult to do because if you're living in a state of stress a lot and you don't have a lot of experience with actually relaxing your body, it can be difficult to know what it feels like to be in a relaxed body. So this next skill is one that kind of works around that. So what happens when you're in a state of threat is that your peripheral vision goes offline because your field of focus narrows. You get what we call tunnel vision. And so one way that we can help calm the body is by expanding your peripheral vision. So go ahead and look in front of you and focus on a spot straight ahead. Take your first two fingers of each hand and put them over to the side of your head but a little bit forward so that you can see them out of the corner of your eyes. And then slowly, over the course of 10 counts, pull them back until you can no longer see them. And just kind of, as you're looking forward, just kind of watch those fingers go backwards in your peripheral vision. Number 6 is to imagine that you're in a relaxing place. The reason that we do imagery like this, the reason why we do a visualization like this is because sometimes our thoughts can limit our experience and it can limit our ability to calm our body. And so when we do a visualization, it helps us to go around our thoughts and go straight into our body for a calming experience. So I'm going to talk you through an exercise. And if you're in a place where you can follow along, please do so. If it helps you to close your eyes, if that helps you to focus, please do so now. If not, just focus on a spot in front of you. So I want you to imagine that you are someplace that you find relaxing and peaceful. And once you're there, I want you to just look around and take in all the sights. What do you see? What colors? What textures? What objects? Are there people there? Are you completely alone? Take in all of the sights. And as you're looking around, notice what you hear. Do you hear birds chirping? Do you hear someone cooking in the kitchen? Do you hear crashing waves? Do you hear someone talking? Notice all of the sounds. And as you're taking in the sights and the sounds, what do you smell? Do you smell food? Do you smell saltwater air? Do you smell pine trees? Whatever you smell, just take it in and notice it. Next, notice what you taste. Are you eating anything or sucking on anything that gives you a taste? If so, notice the taste. And what do you feel across your skin? Do you feel a breeze? Do you feel someone holding your hand? Do you feel a warm blanket wrapped around you? What do you feel? And as you're taking in all the sights and all the sounds and all the smells and the taste, if there is taste, and the feel of things across your skin, what do you notice inside your body? Do you feel relaxed? Do you feel peaceful? Has your heart rate slowed? Has your breathing slowed? If you're noticing any differences, just notice them, but no need to force a change. And if you found this place relaxing, please know that you can return here anytime. Now, I'd like to share some closing thoughts. Remember, emotions are a normal part of your mortal experience. They give us information about the world around us. Do not allow emotions to decide your behaviors. Instead, use your agency to respond to your emotions. And then with this particular congregation, I closed with a quote that I'm going to share with you here. This comes from David A. Bednar, who is an apostle and leader of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And this comes from a talk that he gave in the October 2006 General Conference. He said, "Even when bad things happen around us, we can still choose how we respond. Taking responsibility for how we respond brings peace and power. I'd like to share with you now some additional self-reliance resources. The first comes from the Center for Nonviolent Communication. If you go onto their website, they have something called a feelings inventory. So you could just Google CNVC feelings inventory and it would take you right there. This is a list of emotion words. And if you have difficulty identifying how you're feeling, this can be a good place to start. I recommend you pull this out and you just circle all the feeling words that resonate. So look through it. Am I feeling angry? Am I feeling frustrated? Am I feeling depressed, despondent? Whatever you're feeling, just go through and circle them. This is really good practice. The second resource is a program put out by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It's open to members of the church, and it's also open to those who are not of the Latter-day Saint faith. And it's called Finding Strength in the Lord, Emotional Resilience. It's a 12-week course that's all about learning the basic skills to be able to be emotionally self-reliant and resilient. And it's grounded in, it covers spiritual principles, but it also covers practical principles that are evidence and research based. The next resource is a YouTube video by Dr. John Townsend. It's called, let's see if I can find the name of it. It's called, if you go into YouTube and you Google, and you search for Dr. John Townsend /boundaries/3-2-15, it'll take you right to it. And this is, Dr. John Townsend is a Christian psychologist, and this video is all about boundaries, and he's written several books on the topic. He has a book on boundaries in marriage, boundaries with children, boundaries in all kinds of settings. But he talks about boundaries as a way to protect our stewardship over our inner experiences. So our emotions, our values, our goals, our time, our energy, these are all our part of our stewardship to ourselves. And he talks about how to attend to those responsibilities from a Christian perspective. The next resource is a book called Anxiety Gone, The 3 C's of Anxiety Recovery by Dr. Hibbs. And this is a short book that discusses simple tools to overcome anxiety. It's a really simple read for adults and teens, so I highly recommend that one. The next one is called The Grief Recovery Handbook, The Action Program for Moving Beyond Death, Divorce, and Other Losses, Including Health, Career, and Faith. This is by authors James and Friedman. And this is a step-by-step self-guided program for working through any loss, including death, divorce, loss of a loved one for any other reason, loss of a job, any kind of loss you can think of. And I often recommend this book to clients who are working through loss because it helps to dispel a lot of the myths, and it also gives a step-by-step process for actually working through the grief so that it doesn't have to haunt us quite so much. When we have loss, it always changes us, but it helps us to resolve a lot of the emotional distress around the loss. And the final resource is called The Upward Spiral. It's a book, The Upward Spiral, Using Neuroscience to Reverse the Course of Depression, One Small Change at a Time. This is by Dr. Alex Korb. And this book explains the brain science of why we get depressed. It also gives doable steps to overcome depression and anxiety. So I hope that these explanations and these tools and these resources were helpful to you as you work in your own journey toward becoming more emotionally self-reliant. In some ways, emotional self-reliance is very simple. I explained it in one sentence. Again, emotional self-reliance is your ability to understand your body's signals and choose how to act. It's so simple, but not easy. And so I just invite you to give yourself a lot of grace as you are on this self-reliance journey. And if I can be of any support to you, please look me up on my website, SheenaCastCounseling.com. You can connect with me there. And whether you're looking for that Emotions Made Simple course to go a little bit deeper and learn even more skills, or you're a resident of Washington State and would like to work with me in one-on-one counseling or marital counseling, I'm happy to, marital or couples counseling. I'm happy to support you in any of those ways. Thank you so much for listening, and my thoughts are with you.